Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Four Center, a show about Star Wars pop culture in the ultimate adventure, life itself. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And this particular episode...
I'm sorry.
I was trying to shave.
You both had this really nice deep voices, and I wanted to just match it.
It was great. It was like a beat of delayed reaction. I was like, okay, got to say the audible stuff, get it right. I started speaking, and then I heard the way you delivered your name. Was it? And I'm Jennifer Landa.
Problematic.
Absolutely great. We should take turns all trying to say our own names like one another.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, today's podcast is brought to you by Jennifer Landa and Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are recommending a book we haven't read, but want to, because it's by a great author, and it is about a character that we all adore, Kira. It is Crimson Climb. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/4center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audio book. All right, we have several A's down here in our Q&A episode, but we have another A up, and it is an ask. Ken?
That's right. The A is up, and here it is. Ask. We're asking you to go to our YouTube channel and subscribe if it would please you, if you haven't already. So many of you already have. We're trying to reach 7,500 subscribers as our next little plateau. We're so close. Thank you for those to those who've been following us on the YouTube side as we grow over there. The podcast never going away. We still love broadcasting. Now you just get to see me. As I made a comment on YouTube video this week, the only difference is I can't check email as much as I used to. You know, you can't avoid the work sometimes when you're working. But I got to concentrate because I don't want to let anyone down any more than I did in the past. Other than that, it's the same old Force Center with our faces, and that works for a lot of people. So thank you for those who followed, and subscribe over there if you will.
Yeah, I don't think things have really changed on the broadcast side, but now if people want to watch on YouTube, they can play the fun game of where's their eye line? Is it on their notes? Is it on one another? Are they? Can you catch us checking an email or a text?
Yeah.
Ken just looked down. What's he looking at? Is it his notes or a phone? The tension is so high.
I'm thinking of cheating. I have this teleprompter on my camera now. I'm thinking of putting my notes on there and just staring at it like I'm Tom Brokaw. Just
Doing my notes. I like it.
But then I can't really see you. So sometimes when I'm looking down, it's because I want to see either of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm
like
still
Brady Bunch? Like
yes.
That?
Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm looking up at Jennifer now.
Oh, no. Ken. Now I'm looking at Jennifer. All right. That's fun. That's very fun. We'll always like to talk about our life or Star Wars adventures here on kind of our Other Center episode. Ken, what kind of adventures did you have this week?
I'll tell you. I had the stereotypical middle-aged white man adventure. I watched a great World War II doc. but this one had Star Wars connections. It's the one on Netflix. I forget the actual title of it. Just came out, and it's got, like, archive footage, and it's stuff, even if you think you've seen it all about this well-documented, troubling part of our history, an important part. It had new stuff, but it was narrated by John Boyega. And he did such a wonderful job. And the documentary is mesmerizing because, again, I think even if you've tried to avoid learning about World War II, we all know it to some degree, right? Not only do we know the ending, we know the terms, Battle of the Bulge, Stalin, Mussolini, we've all grown up with it. And I think we should grow up with that history. But it turned it into and I don't mean this like trivially. It turned it into a tension-filled, dear God, I hope we win doc. It's this thing with this map, and it shows the red of Nazi Germany expanding, and then when U.S. and Japan, the Empire of Japan, also, and it just highlights the complicated reasons behind all wars, the buildup that gets there, and then in this the battle of good versus evil, which is again always analyze that, but this one was pretty clear. in terms of the big headlining theme, but it really just, it's not a minute by minute, year by, it takes the biggest things and just drives home the resistance that was alive and well in Poland and Warsaw in the underground immediately after being taken over, goes into the French resistance and what it meant to be free, but also what they did to citizens who they felt were contributors to the fall of France and the problem of racism inside the U.S. military. It's all on display, but it's done in a way that you just feel, and as a Star Wars fan who believes politics run through Star Wars and the how we fight and why we fight is just as important. All that's on display. And then John Boyega, who we'll always be fans of around here, just his wonderful measured narration. Highly recommend it. And it was a real world history meets my Star Wars love and heart type of weekend.
That's great. And I think for those of us who have loved John Boyega's performance of Finn, whether you agree with every choice that was made about the character, it's also just nice to see John Boyega doing anything with Disney.
Yep.
Even if it's just narrating a doc.
Yep. Indeed. Yeah.
Jennifer, how about you? Life for Star Wars Adventures this week?
The only Star Wars adventure would be I went to IKEA and I saw that lamp. There's this lamp that is kind of similar to the Death Star. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And people have DIY'd it to make it look like the Death Star. And I saw it and I was like, I really want to have one. I don't have the time. My husband shut it down. No more projects, no more Star Wars in our home. So I just kind of went by it and just looked at it wistfully. The only other thing, well, this is not Star Wars related, but I finally finished Leave the World Behind on Netflix. I think I mentioned this last week.
Heard good things.
I should have finished it in ideally one or two sittings. We spread it out over the course of like days because we both get so tired, we fall asleep or it's just too late, right? It's a great movie, great performances, interesting ending. That's all I'll say. But I would love to see Mahershala Ali in a Star Wars. I mean, there's just so many great actors out there. Julia Roberts is also in this. I don't know if I could see her in a Star Wars, but that would be interesting.
I love Julia Roberts. I don't think I could see her in Star Wars. Yeah, it'd be too...
It'd be too, it's too much like movie star-ish, like it'd be like Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, it'd be like Ocean's 12, like, you can pretend to be Julia Roberts,
Exactly. She's always kind of Julia Roberts. I'm always aware of that in the back of my mind. Ethan Hawke is also in that. He's great.
Who wants to be in Star Wars? He just put an interview out.
He did?
That's his ultimate goal.
I love it. I could see it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I want him to play like a down on his luck, naughty Jedi.
I could see that. Yes. Yes.
I do too.
And I think Julia Roberts should be like a master codebreaker, like cameo.
Right. Right.
This is this charming woman in the casino.
Exactly.
There you go.
I think that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I had a lot of adventures this week, including organizing my Obi-Wan Kenobi trading cards, which I'm enjoying doing very much. And then I had a haircut this week. I always love talking with my stylist. She's one of the people that I get to talk to who is a fan of Star Wars, but doesn't listen to podcasts, doesn't listen to books. She legitimately likes it, but her husband got her into it. And I've slowly but surely learned all of her husband's very strong opinions, some of which I agree with and some of which are like, okay, well, and now we must depart paths. So I was really looking forward to hearing her Ahsoka opinions. And it was really great because she was like, I was like, so Ahsoka? And she was like, oh, I loved it. And then she's like, but this bugged me and this bugged me and this bugged me. So it was a little bit of a Star Wars constant. Like, you love the whole thing, but all these little pieces were not for you. So that was really fun. Not a life adventure, but since you both shared things you watched, it felt like one of those kind of life lessons that's in Star Wars you have to learn and relearn. Going back to Obi-Wan Kenobi putting the helmet on Luke of like, don't trust your eyes, you know, they can deceive you. Of falling into assumptions. I have been a big Frank Sinatra fan for like 20 years, a long time, long time. And there are some of his movies that I haven't seen because, you don't get around to him or whatever. But there was one particular movie that I made assumptions about. So years like 54, 55, he's in a bunch of movies and some of them are his very best. But he's in a movie with Doris Day called Young at Heart. It's called Young at Heart. It's got Doris Day. All of the advertisements are Frank and Doris singing. And I've always been like, Doris Day got sort of painted with that she had, you know, the show that was really like, you know, have 2.5 kids. These are the rules of being an American in the 50s. And really like she you'd hear her name sort of referenced as an umbrella term for sort of 50s complacency. And I had a couple Doris Day records. I thought, oh, man, she's a great singer and more soulful than I was led to believe. But I believed the myth of Doris Day. I believed the advertising that Young at Heart was just I'm sure it'll be just a fine, nice little romantic comedy. It is a nice romantic comedy, but it's also like super, got some incredibly dark, bleak stuff. It is... A film that was written in the 50s with lots of winks and nods of we can't say this, but you all pick up what we're laying down, right? Great stuff. And it was just one of those moments. It was Sinatra's birthday last Tuesday as we're recording. And it's like, I've heard some rumblings that it's different than I thought. And it was one of those like, I might have been an entirely different person if I'd watched this 25 years ago and not just sort of made assumptions based on, you know, the cover and of the DVD and Doris Day. So that was a fun, a great movie and a fun adventure.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you're fan is, you know. I put so many movies on a shelf that maybe I shouldn't have because I go, yeah, I think I understand.
Yeah, or even if you're like, I like this band, and but everybody's told me this one album is bad, and you never get around to it, and then you listen to it, and like, the hell were they talking about? This is amazing, you know? Yeah. That kind of stuff is fascinating. All right, those are our life and Star Wars adventures this week. More to come. We're going to jump into our cues. These come to us from patrons on Patreon. The first one is from Anakin Crespin, real name Anakin. Amazing. Anakin says, hello, I know. He doesn't say it like that. I don't know why I said it so fast. Hello. Like an annoyed neighbor. Hello. Anakin says it in a friendly way, like, hello. I know at least one of you is a Doctor Who fan, Joseph. And since it's now on Disney Plus, I was wondering how you would recommend diving in and what to watch. Would you say the new Disney Plus special is accessible to new viewers? And for Jennifer and Ken, have you ever dabbled in the world of Doctor Who? Thanks, and may the Force be with you. We touched on this a little bit on our live stream, but I do want to answer Anakin's question and talk about some diving in points. But I'm much more interested in starting with Ken and Jennifer's history or lack of history of the show and kind of to what we were just talking about of, if you don't know it, what has made it to you culturally and what do you think it is, right? Mm-hmm. So, Ken, what is your relationship in not having a relationship with Doctor Who?
Yeah, and I can't wait to get to you, Jed, here, because I think we've talked about this before a few times, Joseph, right, if I remember, but I love kind of catching up with it. This is exactly what you were talking about with the Doris Day Sinatra film. I've so put Doctor Who on the shelf because of just childhood perspective on weird British show with robots. What is that? Like, and never took the deep dive. Though there's so much, you know, the little fun Easter egg connections between Doctor Who and Star Wars because of the costumes and sets. Me being a giant Douglas Adams fan, as you are, Joseph, and his connection to Doctor Who. It's all there. And then when it started to come back, I have a problem. It's a problem where I can get oddly stubborn with things that become too popular, whether it's popular on a big level or popular in my circle of friends. Case in point, I can't tell you how many times people were like, dude, you've got to watch the Battlestar Galactica reboot. This is in the early 2000s. My writing partner, Matt Key, was like, you've got to watch it. I was like, no. I like Lauren Green in the original. luckily I ended up watching it early days of when I got Netflix and loved the series. At the time was working with Katie Sackhoff on the Schmoes No Show, and it was just like it was like Starbuck. It was so cool. That's my problem. And so I think I have a little of that when Who started coming back and was now in the nerd sphere, and you could go to conventions and Matt Smith was holding court at parties because he's the 11th Doctor. That during that time, I so put walls up to it that piece by piece, Joseph, you're gonna have to help me break down.
I relate to this in lots of ways, but in particular, there was one time where Matt Smith and the showrunner at the time, Stephen Moffat, were having drinks like a table away from me and all my nerd comedy friends. And everybody's leaving alone for the most part. It was really cool. So I was like, I'm gonna leave them alone. They wrapped up, but Matt Smith didn't finish his beer when everybody's being kicked out. And my eyes went to it. And like my wife, Sarah, could just understand. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you moving toward that beer? And like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to drink the doctor's leftover beer. And she was like, I think we found the line on your fandom, husband. He's a human man. You're not going to just drink his leftover beer to try to be closer to him. Like, no, I can take Doctor Who inside my body. I might have already had several beers, which has probably contributed to this this choice I almost made. But yeah, that makes sense. Can you have a resistance to being pushed? And you also have a kind of complicated relationship with genre, right? You have genre stuff you like. Like Star Wars, Game of Thrones, but you are fans of those things, not necessarily all of science fiction and fantasy. And I think a lot of people come to Doctor Who, particularly people my age in America, Gen X, when you're like, I love Star Wars, I love Star Trek. Is there anything else? Mm-hmm. Here's Doctor Who under that mm-hmm. same umbrella of science fiction and fantasy, and you're hungry for that. But that's yeah. never the way you were. You're a fan of individual correct. Properties, not the genre.
Yeah, to the point where I don't mean to be an a-hole or a jerk about it, but yeah, that, you know, and so there's some good-hearted people. Oh, you like Game of Thrones? You should definitely read this book. I'm like, no, I'm not. No, and I don't mean that way, but yes, you're right. But again, to that time, and I know we talked about it too, but like, during that time, oh my God, I do love Star Wars. And I did like Star Trek IV, one of my favorite movies to watch in theater, like blah, blah, blah. And what else is out there? The hell is this Doctor Who thing? like it just, it was BBC shot on the set. It was like, that's not for me. That's not for me.
Yep. No, and understandable. Mm-hmm. Well, I will give you a personal recommendation of where you should try out in Doctor Who, and then we're going to move to Jennifer. The season where Douglas Adams was the script writer, which, you know, at the time it was really divided between the producer and then the script writer would write or rewrite episodes that were commissioned. So the whole season is very Douglas Adamsy. But there's one of the most popular episodes of classic Doctor Who called City of Death. That is shot in studio, but also on location in Paris. So not only is it just like a lost episode of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, just that Douglas Adams style and wit everywhere, an infamous Doctor Who character named Duggan that you would love, but it involves the Eiffel Tower as well. And I know this year you went to Paris, so specifically designed for you. Watch the episode City of Death.
Okay.
Jennifer. What is your relationship or not relationship with Doctor Who?
I love Doctor Who. I'm not a mega fan in the sense that I don't know every episode. I haven't watched every episode. I got into it with the Ninth Doctor, Christopher Eccleston. Mm-hmm. Loved him. Companion Billy Piper. In that season, there are so many classic episodes, right? The Are You My Mummy episode, mm-hmm. right? Oh, that's a good one. And the Lady Cassandra? Yes. Mm-hmm. Right? I think, is she in that Ninth Doctor or is she the Tenth?
Yes. She's in both.
She's in both, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. So then I transitioned to the Tenth Doctor with David Tennant, who also is fantastic. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. I really liked Chris's take on it, but I also love David Tennant as well. And then with Matt Smith, I kind of fell off. Mm-hmm. But it is funny that you mentioned about the cons, because I do remember going to cons around that time and him really being a presence and people whispering, Matt Smith, oh my gosh, see my mom. Right? And so, mm-hmm. and I felt kind of like left out because I'm like, damn it, I should have kept up. I have nothing. I have no knowledge to draw from. But it was really an exciting time. I remember that time of just feeling like, as we were talking about off air, like the geek community felt kind of small.
Yeah.
And so it was just, it felt really special. Yeah.
Yeah. And Doctor Who in particular, you know, from me growing up, it was a weird thing that in Minneapolis, and I think most other places in America, it was on public television. And then it was on some weird VHS tapes and that was it. And it was the idea that it would come back after it was, the classic series was canceled in 89. The idea that it would come back at all was amazing. The idea that Doctor Who is this deeply British thing about a quirky man who will not carry a gun flying around in a police box that needs to be explained to an audience, that could become popular in America was a part of that moment in the early 2010s where, for lack of a better term, like the nerds burst out of the closet and took over the world.
Yeah.
Burst out of the locker that that our generation felt we had been stuffed in. Mm-hmm. And they came out and like, look at this. Mm-hmm. The doctor taking America by storm. How is this even possible?
You know? So true.
A very specific time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I felt like, because I always have been very much a lover of British culture and British things. And so it did feel like, oh, there's other people like me that like something British.
Yeah.
It felt really unique and definitely, a moment for the mainstream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was really powerful. And I think, I'm curious. So for Matt Smith's tenure, there's the change to a new doctor, which can always be a bump for people if they're attached to the previous doctor. But his episodes, the actual plots, became much more convoluted because Stephen Moffat really likes writing very twisty things. A couple of seasons were also broken into two different halves, so you really had to work hard to keep up. with the actual just plot. Was it the more twisty plots that drove you away, or was it adjusting to the new Doctor of Matt Smith?
I think it was probably adjusting to the new Doctor, because he was, I don't know if he is younger, but he definitely had like a younger spirit to him.
He was the youngest actor ever cast at that point, and made me feel absolutely ancient.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. And I'm not even remember, I was trying to look up what year that was that Matt Smith came on board. What year
2010.
Was that?
2010.
It was 2010? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I had time. I don't know. I don't know why I fell off. It's one of those things where I'm like, oh, I want to go back. Because now they have the new special, right, that's coming out? Or is it already out on Disney Plus?
There are three specials on Disney Plus that you can watch right now. And on Christmas Day, the new Doctor starts.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm like, shoot, can I just jump on board with the new Doctor or not?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. That is the to answer Anakin's question, I'll try to keep this short, but I'm going to fail a little bit. I apologize ahead of time about where to jump in.
Yeah.
I think the biggest and most important answer is this coming Christmas Day on Disney Plus, there will be a new episode of Doctor Who starring the 15th Doctor, played by Judy Gatwa. And I think it has been very clearly set up to be, have you never, ever heard of Doctor Who? Come on in.
Welcome. Great.
I really, really think that is the case. So Russell T. Davies is the showrunner who brought Doctor Who back in 2005 with Christopher Eccleston. And he was a showrunner for many years. And then we had Stephen Moffat, and then we had Chris Chibnall. And Doctor Who had some ups and downs. BBC's commitment level to it was waning. And then Russell T. Davies kind of came back in of like, give me Doctor Who. And I will make it Star Wars and MCU. That's what I want to do, and I can do it. And it's not it's still going to be British, but it's a different world. People aren't just going to go, I can't understand. They're going to read a bunch of explainers, and they're going to ask their friends, like Anakin is doing, of where to jump in. Now there's this Disney Plus deal, so it's much more accessible to people in America who have Disney Plus. It had been airing on BBC America with obnoxious commercials. So BBC doesn't have commercials. So the episodes weren't built for commercials. So you would watch in America a new episode and like the doctor would say like the most emotionally heartbreaking thing. And then it would just sort of slam into get a Toyota and not in a way that was built for it in any way. And it was the most frustrating, annoying way. And now it's premiering at the exact same time for everyone in the world. So you can watch. So it's a really attitude of new era, come in. You can even watch those three specials. It was fascinating to me because maybe sometime we can have a larger conversation about accessibility of shared universes. But I know I felt when watching Ahsoka, I got distracted sometimes because I understand who these characters are, but I feel bad for people who don't. And now I know we've heard from people who said, I never seen anything and I had no problem. Great. I'm happy for you. I got distracted. The specials start with the doctor looking into the camera going, here's what you need to know. It's so the opposite of sometimes what Star Wars does or what MCU does, asking you to remember. The doctor grabs the audience by the shoulders and goes, here's what you need to know. That's how those specials start. There's a real sense of invitation. Everyone is welcome.
And who's okay? I feel like I'm some old lady. My mom. Who's the doctor in those specials? Is that the new doctor, or is that another doctor that we had?
Well, that is a little complicated. So, David Tennant played the 10th Doctor. The show moved on. Jodie Whittaker was the 13th Doctor. Jodie Whittaker regenerated. Well, for anybody who doesn't know, that's how Doctor Who works. The Doctor regenerates and retains all of their memories, but their personality shifts to this new actor, this new version of themselves. It's a show about renewal, a theme about renewal. So anyway, 13th Doctor regenerates into the 14th Doctor, who is David Tennant. And the Doctor themselves are like, why did I turn back into a version of myself I have been before? I have never done that. It is weirding me out. I'm upset about it.
Huh.
So it sounds complicated, but it's not. You start it with a version of the doctor going, why am I who I am? Mm-hmm. Which is easy enough to understand, you know? Mm. It's like, you know, going to college. Why am I like this? Why? What's going on? Mm. Yeah. So you can absolutely jump in on the specials. You can jump in on Christmas Day, the new episode, Church on Ruby Road. It's called New Doctor, New Companion, everything. A couple of other than just quick recommendations. I think if you're at all interested in the classic series, it's a very different thing. You almost have to put like your historian hat on because it was they were filmed largely in studios, sometimes on location. But Doctor Who, this science fiction spectacular, the special effects were amazing for what was being asked of this team. This team was basically like, hey, you know, the same way we shoot drama shows of like, hey, we're doing I, Claudius, and it's on a stage and the actors play it out and the camera people film it like it's a live stage play with no audience. Mm. We're going to do that except for with science fiction and fantasy. We're going to take the smallest budget possible and say it can happen anywhere in space and time. Here's a tiny budget. Figure it out. And all of these clever people working hard to figure it out are amazing. Now, from American perspective, coming from Star Wars, going, what? That was a lot of the bump. But if you put your hat on, how did these people figure it out? It's incredibly impressive. If you want to try out classic series, I recommend season 12. It is the fourth Doctor's first season. Fourth Doctor is sort of the icon of Doctor Who, Tom Baker, with the scarf, the hat, the jelly babies. His first season's amazing. For New Who, I think you can start where Jennifer did, Christopher Eccleston, the Doctor and Rose. You can just jump right to the beginning of the 10th Doctor. 12th Doctor has a great season that starts out being a reintroduction. Season 10, the episode The Pilot, re-explains what Doctor Who is. It's fascinating because it's like for half a season, it's like, so you've never seen Doctor Who. It's entirely friendly to you. And like about episode 6, like, just a lore dump of things that are impossible to understand if you haven't been with it. So that one's a risk. 13th Doctor, you can jump in. Final thing, a lot of people recommend individual episodes if you just want to have like a taste and go, is this for me? So a couple of individual episodes I recommend and we'll wrap up. The 10th Doctor, David Tennant, he's just got a ton of energy and charm and he is what made the new series popular and people love him. A couple of great episodes from him is one called Blink. It introduces this great twisty concept. The Doctor isn't even in it that much, but it shows you everything that the show can be. There's a double parter called Human Nature, Family of Blood, where for complicated reasons, the Doctor has to forget who he is. And it's incredibly well done. I'm biased. The person who wrote it, Paul Cornell, is a friend of mine that I've made over conventions over the years. There's also an episode called Midnight with David Tennant, which is a great creepy horror kind of slow dread thriller. The 11th Doctor for Matt Smith. If you just want to jump in, one of the greatest episodes of Doctor Who is called Vincent and the Doctor. It is about the Doctor meeting up with Vincent Van Gogh. And it's just incredibly profound about the problems that Vincent Van Gogh faced in life. And it shows you how a weird science fiction fantasy show about a Time Lord who can regenerate, who travels around in a police box that's bigger on the inside. Like all that sounds like, what are you talking about? It's about the human connection. And this is the Doctor trying to help Vincent Van Gogh, which as we all know from history is a big ask. It's also an episode written by Neil Gaiman that people love called The Doctor's Wife.
Hmm.
And finally, the 12th Doctor, Peter Capaldi, who is my personal favorite. A lot of people don't like some of his seasons, but everybody likes him. He's just an incredibly deep, complicated, brilliant actor. This is an episode called Listen, which is, I think, a great one-off for the 12th Doctor. All right, I'm done.
No. Great. I've already seen calls for Who Center in our Discord.
I'm open to it.
I think Joseph, you're just gonna have to do a spinoff.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I think there's there's so many things that we want to do, and it's the time consumption of watching something. But at some point, if you want to watch like literally like pick something like Vincent and the Doctor, and it's one episode, and we all watch it and then do an episode about it, like that would be really fun because of that time commitment level.
Or we start with the new, and then that way it's more manageable for me.
Yes, true.
Just to start with a new one.
Time management. All right. Yeah. Thanks for talking, Doctor Who. I could talk about it for a long time, but we are going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with a very different kind of question back in a moment.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
And we are back. We have talked World War II, Doris Day, and Doctor Who. But now we're here to talk about the next logical topic, sports. This comes to us from 8984M, who says, on the live Q&A a little while back, Ken gave a passionate telling of the story and stakes for the World Series. Thank you for telling the wonderful story behind the Rangers manager. It made their winning feel that much better. Anyways, that made me think about why we love sports or any sort of live competition for the non-sports fans out there. Why does it feel so good when our laundry wins or so bad when they lose? Let's go Lakers. Ken, do you want to give a refresher on the term laundry?
First of all, I was going to make the joke like we have four center, other center, who center, and then sports center. Oh, that's where the name came from. That's what we've done. This question, 89484M, asked around probably early November, the World Series. The Texas Rangers not only won their first championship as a franchise, Bruce Bochy came back, who had won with the San Francisco Giants. He had got to the World Series with the San Diego Padres. He had retired. He's in his early 70s, and he came back in a new era of baseball with new way of playing the game, new way of analyzing the game. And he didn't just take it back to the good old days. He adjusted and he grew and he brought his experience and therefore took this franchise and turned it around kind of fast to win this World Series. So it was just fun to watch an old guy play a new game or manage a new game, and lessons of themes, lessons and themes of change and growth, and experience mattering as just as much as the other two. So it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah, that's great. And can you remind me on laundry? That's a because I had just learned this term on our live stream.
Yeah, it comes from do you cheer for the name on the back or the name on the front, which is the laundry, the uniforms. So for me as a New York Yankee fan of baseball, I have players that I'm loyal to. So if they were to leave, I might follow them. But I'm a Yankee fan. I root for the Yankee laundry. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But that and that was a great way for me to understand a part of it that I didn't understand, because so often sports fans are talking about all the statistics and they have a player of like, and they're so upset when a player that they think their team should draft doesn't draft. And it's just like, it's so analytical. And that's such a fun part of it. Like, why isn't everybody just following the team they feel to be statistically the best,
right?
And understanding that it is entirely a, like, I am with this team, good or bad. If somebody from the inside tries to destroy this team by picking all the worst people on purpose, I'm still with them. I'm still with my laundry, because I'm the front of the shirt. I'm with the team, not the players necessarily.
Yeah, and even when your favorite Wade Boggs leaves the Red Sox and joins the hated Yankees and wins a title with the Yankees, not the Red Sox. Oh, the Beantown never forgave him.
Yeah. Amazing. Jennifer, what is your basic relationship with sports? It's been a part of your life, being cheering for teams up to a point.
I mean, I love the Lakers. I like that 8984M said live competition, which made me think Project Runway, Top Chef.
Same.
I can't really watch sports, even with my beloved Lakers. I get too emotionally invested and too upset. If I see they're down and my husband's like, there's still a lot of time left, I'm like, no, there's not. There's only a minute left, right? I can't take it. But with a Top Chef or a Project Runway, it's drawn out over the course of several episodes. And there's something about seeing people at the top of their game, no pun intended, these elite athletes, elite crafters, elite baker's chefs, me on the sidelines going, don't do that. Go that way. No, you should have done a souffle or whatever, right? I just think that they're achieving the impossible, which is what is so, it's thrilling. It's something I'll never be able to do, right? I'll never be able to make those kinds of baskets or three-pointers or whatever. But it's like, when they actually score, it's like, I can't even describe it. But that's why I don't watch sports, because I get too upset when they don't hit the three-pointer.
Do you get that upset? Like, if you're – I mean, I think the reality shows is a great comparison. It's a little bit different because you are rooting for the person, right? You have your favorite, the scene you want to win, Project Runway.
Right.
Do you get just as upset if your person fails when you're watching Project Runway?
Yes, I do. I get very upset. I think what is also interesting is when you see anybody in a competitive setting is, yes, skill and talent, but also the focus and the ability to perform under these stressful situations, right? Is like, I could talk about the Clippers. I like the Clippers too. And there were so many moments where they had these talented players, but then they just couldn't get out of their own way in their head a lot of times. And I know I can get in my own way. So seeing these people just thriving under these stressful conditions, it's like, yes. Or when you see them failing and getting in their own head about things, not believing in themselves, it's just like a gut punch where it's like, oh, we can all relate to that. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting thing about sports and reality shows reality shows are heavily edited to craft those narratives, right?
Of course, yes.
I watch British Bake Off, which people tell me is the lightest possible reality show, and I'm still screaming at the screen. But it builds those narratives clearly for all of us of this person's really good at baking, but they're really bad at decorating. So you're like halfway through, like, decorate the bleep out of that bleeper, please.
right.
And sports, I feel like sometimes I can act when I just like watch the Super Bowl once a year. Sometimes I can access the narrative that's been built around a player, but not always. But I know that's what people who follow this closely, that's a lot of what they're doing. Right. Ken, there that journey is edited and delivered for us on reality television. But in sports, it's built up over like lots of different points. Right.
Yeah, but in the same regard, once sports became this mainstay on broadcast television, right? Once and radio emerges, but excuse me, once we get to the 50s and you can see it, and you don't just read about it in the newspaper, I think it takes on what you're talking about. I look at the Olympics and the Olympic broadcasts as the template for. Yes. Great, we're going to watch cross-country skiing. You don't care about cross-country skiing, but do you care about this skier we're going to do a 10-minute profile on or a 3-minute profile on whose grandfather lost his legs in a mining accident and his only dream was to ski and now his grandson's taking it. Now you care. Now you care. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how this all kind of really started to grow at leaps and bounds. Now there's a conversation to have about sports culture. And how that trickled down to and still does cause some problems and who it attracts and where the gladiators and power wins and all the stuff. And you and I, Joseph, over the years have, I think, had wonderful, fruitful conversations of the good and bad of it. And, and on the other sides, and you're someone who maybe one of the things you've always said I loved is you're like, I might have liked sports. No one took the time to teach me. I did not grow up in a sports family, and I did not like sports. I was a nerd beat up on my school playground for wearing Return of the Jedi shirt. And then in sixth grade, I started to collect baseball cards. Sixth grade, I had a friend, Sean, who literally sat down on the playground with me and said, "Let me teach you how to play football. And let me tell you what's going on." It's the greatest thing, you know. And so I've always had my feet in both worlds. And look, we got Dark Side of Star Wars fandom and everything. It's no fingers at one genre, but I think underneath it, this the stories they're so human when they're prevalent and you can see the stories and root for them as people. Sometimes you learn about sports players and you end up not wanting to root for them because of who they really are. looking at you, Curt Schilling, but it's that human story down to a field, a broadcast, and you're right. Reality shows are certainly edited to that way, but that's the appeal. So I was a huge Survivor fan for years, and I fell for every story they put forth. You know, like, it was fun.
So appealing to the just sort of human narrative, and also the narrative of the team. Right, they're the. If you've been with them forever and they're down on their luck and nobody thinks they can do it, but they do. Like, I mean, that's almost every sports movie, right? Is this, one of my greatest enjoyment of sport ever is watching the TV show Friday Night Lights, which just delivered all of that to me of who these characters are, what they want, what they need, how much people don't believe in them and getting in their heads, all that narrative. So I think that's really powerful, but I also just want to talk about a little bit to 8984M's question of that explains why we're drawn in and want to watch sports. But 8984M asks why it feels so good and so bad. Why do we get so invested? I think the narrative is part of that, but I have, like Jennifer, I make a point of watching the Super Bowl because I feel like it's kind of just checking in with our culture from the sport to the actual commercials to what everybody's saying.
Time period.
And I'll start off kind of like flipping about like, I haven't been paying any attention, so I don't got any baggage. And, you know, it's a tired joke, but we're like, I like dolphins. I like the animals. So I'll root for that team. And with having none of this narrative backstory, none of it at all, I will get caught up in it and suddenly be, you know, yelling at a bad play without any of the narrative, just with that extremely simple human, I picked this one and now I'm furious if anything gets in their way. Yeah. What do you think that like level of, you don't even need the narrative, that almost animal, like there's a turtle race and I picked that one. I know nothing about these turtles. I just picked one and now I'm dead set that mine needs to win. What is that about? What do you think, Ken?
To quote Sir Jorah Mormont from Game of Thrones, there's a beast in every man and it stirs when you put a sword in his hand. I think this is the dark side of our human nature. Winning does feel good. Losing feels bad, and excitement and joy and the connection. Then add in what we talked about here, the details. And that does, you know, look, as a Miami Dolphin fan, in the early 90s in high school, I was a real demonstrative football fan to myself. I always watch games with myself. Like I tell the story, it's 100% true. Dolphins lost a game Monday Night Football late in the fourth quarter, the Buffalo Bills on a fumble. And I was keeping stats on a piece of paper and I got so mad, I ripped the stats and I ate them. And I was like, and 1995, the Yankees finally get to the playoffs again. My guy Don Mattingly can maybe go his back. He couldn't move. He couldn't swing anymore. Maybe we finally – he had never played in the postseason. He hits a big home run. The Mariners beat us in game five of the playoff series on a bottom of the 13th inning, whatever it was. Got so mad I threw a cup through a window. And that was the moment I was like, I can't – this is not right, right? This is not right. And so now I have a Jedi-like Qui-Gon. I've come back to root for the Dolphins. They just got embarrassed on Monday Night Football 2 weeks ago. Blew a game with 4 minutes to a team that was less than. And I just went zen. This is a valuable lesson. And I will learn. I just think it goes to the human nature thing. I don't have any super intelligent, insightful answer. We just – it all pulls us in. We all have that dark side. And I think it taps into it. I think it taps the desire to win.
Yeah, I got some thoughts, but I want to pitch to Jennifer. First off, I almost drank Matt Smith's beer, and Ken ate his own piece of paper. Yep. Jennifer, what weird of you almost, or ate?
I don't know, but I don't like losing. I think I've shared this before. I was playing Monopoly with my family, and I lost, and I threw the board and the pieces like a New Jersey housewife.
You flipped the table.
I literally flipped the board. I couldn't lift the table. I flipped the board. My family never wanted to play with me again. That's amazing. I'm a sore loser. I do think from a psychological standpoint, it's like a dopamine hit when you win. I think it's like, that's why, you know, gambling is such an issue. It's like getting that rush. Hit me. I want to win again. Or when your team does win, you're chasing that high again. And it can be taken to such an extreme level where people have, you know, problems with it. So I think that that's also why I know that I have that tendency. Mm-hmm. So I can't play games. I can't play sports. The only thing I watch is like Project Runway and the Lakers.
Jenna, do you, if this is turning too much into therapy center, you do not have to answer. But do you have feelings about where that came from? Like, because for me, like when I get that way, it's triggered by specific incidents where I felt losing made me feel mocked, made me feel less than. And for me, when I get mad about losing, it's that absolute fear of they're going to laugh at me. They're going to make me feel less than, and my teeth come out and the rage comes out and I'm going to prove I'm not less than. Mm. So it's like really tied to triggering events. Do you feel the same way, or do you just feel like, no, I really want to be good at Monopoly?
Yeah, probably, like, because I'm used to being good at things. So when I'm not good at things, it's very frustrating. And that could come to, you know, a variety of things. Me not understanding the importance of hard work as opposed to talent, believing that talent was everything, as opposed to anybody can do something through hard work. But I do think that also there's just something like in my brain that's just kind of the way that I'm wired. And I think that some people just have maybe more of a tendency to feel that way. I don't know. And then you just kind of have to learn in your life how to not be a sore loser. It's okay to lose. But maybe there is something like some sort of neurodivergent thing that's going on in there.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? It's complicated. And for the most part, I can stay out of that mindset. But then sometimes there are people who are competitive and I just have to be like, I'm not playing a game with you because you are going to set me off and I don't want to have that problem. And other people I can play with, no problem. About the, you know, why it feels so good when we win and so bad when we lose, I think, Ken, you're absolutely right. It is the narrative. It is just human instinct. It is the Jennifer, the dopamine hit. A thing that I think about a lot, especially as I get older, is I think it's natural in humans, good, bad, or otherwise, that we have this sort of cycle of wanting and achieving, hunger and satiation. That how good something tastes, feels, is connected to how long and hard we've been pining for it. One of the best meals I ever had was a terrible McDonald's burger, undercooked in Tulsa, Oklahoma, because I'd been on a Greyhound bus with no food for 16 hours. And that half-done quarter pounder is one of the best dining experiences I've ever had, because it was carnal after waiting for the satiation. And it's a thing I think about a lot in our adult lives, that as we are teens and young adults, we want all these things. We want our first relationship or our first car, our first apartment, our first job, because of the nature of things. And then a lot of life can lead us into just being like, and now settle down. You're an adult. You've got your job. You got your kids. You're in these patterns where the cycles of wanting and achieving, hunger and satiation, kind of slow down or risk disappearing entirely. Mm. And I feel like if you're in a, not that adults are the only ones who like sports, but I think that there can, if you feel at all stuck or stagnating in your life where you don't have those cycles of longing that make the getting feel even more satisfying, that sports is a great way to just put all of that, like, we don't think about, like, we don't think it's great to want things, but it really can be great to want things. And, I, you know, putting myself in the shoes of a sports person who says, I have committed to this team and I have waited 17 years for them to win. That to me kind of helps explain the explosion of how powerful that need is, because you've been giving yourself years and years and years of want and extending that cycle between the hunger and the satiation, and equally the fury. We got so close this time, and I was finally going to get a thing I've been pining for 17 years. Yeah. Ken, how do you feel about this? Am I being an absolute weirdo?
Nope. You're digging deep into some wonderful themes there. And I'm not saying it's a replacement for, you know, your dull life now feels better if the Dolphins win. But you're hitting on some important things of it's an arena to scratch that itch to get to feel like you win, to feel like you're justified, that the journey was worth it. And that's hard. I always would argue that sports competition in general, take it out of sports competition. It's a refiner's fire, right? But we concentrate on the end result more than the journey, because that's just natural. That's the glory. That's the scoreboard. And then case in point for me, I think this is kind of in the arena you're talking about. 1995, the Yankees, who had won, you know, best team in baseball for 40, 50 years. They had a very dark period. They emerge from the late 80s into the 90s. They get so close in 95. Donnie Baseball retires. A new team, new generation kind of is built around new players. They win the World Series in 1996. Joe Torre, his brother dying of cancer, I think ended up fighting through it at that time, Frank Torre. Joe Torre has never won. He's the manager. He's winning. The Yankees haven't won in 15 years or so. They win. The final out's caught by Charlie Hayes. I bawl. I cry. I'm 1996, and I'm like, I've done it. The Yankees then go in a period of time where they're the most dominant team in baseball for the next 5-6 years. The last series they won in 2000, I like turned off the TV and was like, what's for dinner? Like the I had been satiated and I needed to find something else. And they win in 2009. They haven't won a lot, but I don't, the passion for the Yankees is not there for me as much as it was from 96 to as it's, so I think that speaks to what you're saying. So
yeah,
I started concentrating on other areas of life, because I was like, cool, that was fun. That journey was over. I got to experience it.
Yeah. Jennifer, what do you think about it?
Yeah, I also think that there's something about an us versus them, which goes back to like our ancestors with the different tribes moving together, right? Like we are all, we won as a group, right? There's nothing like when you go in a stadium and you're rooting for the not the home team, right? And you suddenly feel like, oh shoot. Or if you have no allegiance to either team and you're in the section with a bunch of whatever fans, and you're like, yeah, okay, I'm a part of this too, because God forbid you actually say you're not, right? Sports brings people together. Are you a Mets fan? Are you a, you know, Lakers fan? Yes. It's like that instant camaraderie that I never have with anyone, because I have no allegiance except for the Lakers. So it's like this shorthand and a way to be like, you're okay. Cause you like the same sports team as me. You're all right. And it's really fascinating to see how angry people get with each other in those stadiums and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Ooh, my gosh, especially when there's alcohol and things involved, right? Mm-hmm. It's dangerous. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. People take it so personally.
Yeah, you're reminding me of a fun and terrifying experience I had several years back going to Medieval Times. I don't know if either of you have been to Medieval Times.
Competitive dinner.
I mean, it's the fun, like, you know, Renaissance-y. Verily, my sir, may I have your credit card? Please. Please, Grandmaster, I need you to use the chip. I mean, it is the funny contrast. But yeah, if, for people who don't know it, you're like, you know, the shtick is you are in the stands at a medieval tournament. There's a king and the queen. There's a light narrative. Then you watch actual impressive, like, people shooting bows while riding horses and actual falconry. And it's like, it's cool. But to juice it, like you're saying, Jennifer, they hand out flags to the different sections. Mm-hmm. And you're, you know, nominally whatever it is, a family from this part of town or whatever. But you've just been handed flags, colored flags, and you're sitting with strangers in some of the fury and the anger, the hatred that the yellow flag people had for the blue flag people with no substantive narrative. It's not like what we were talking about earlier where, like, they told this great story of how the blue flag people had wronged the yellow. It wasn't narrative. It was just the smallest thing given the permission to unleash the us versus them beast. Mm-hmm. It was funny and absolutely terrifying how quickly people can revert to the dangerous simplicity of us versus them for no reason, just any reason to be different.
Yep. And when you have a leader to stir that up and turn it into votes.
Yep. Yeah. If you want to understand authoritarianism, go to Medieval Times. how quickly the flag people turn on one another. Wrap up a conversation. Interested to bring it back to art and to Star Wars and that, which we talk about a lot. I think that cycle of hunger and satiation, I think, is also what is going on with MCU and Star Wars and the decisions about how much to put out. Mm-hmm. Is your great story, Ken, about weeping because it's finally back, or did the Yankees finally won? That was The Force Awakens. And for a lot of people, great, now there's going to be Skeleton Crew. Jude Law's going to run around with some kids. I've been satiated, right? I'm not saying that's everyone by any means, especially a lot of people who listen or watch Force Center. We're all in. It's been too long. Ahsoka's been off the air for a month and a half. What? I'm hungry. Satiate me. For the movie, a lot of people have finished the cycle. But I think that being so excited for it because we've waited a while is what's going on behind the scenes with Bob Iger deciding right now how much Marvel, how much Star Wars to release is about that hunger satiation cycle. What do you think about that, Ken?
I think it's only been a month. Give me a new series person not too long ago. And the strikes and all the stuff we talked about before when Ahsoka started, I had some of that like, yeah, the Yankees keep winning. Like I just had this like, I don't know. I'm kind of on to other things right now. And that's changed. I've reconnected, blah, blah, blah. But there's some truth to that. It's just human nature. It's just human nature. And that's why I am glad that they, for whatever reasons, Kathleen Kennedy's mistakes, Bob Iger's mistakes, Chapek's mistakes, the fact that there hasn't been a movie in theater since 2019 is actually something I enjoy right now. Because when it does happen again, those tears might be back.
Yep. And the hunger's building.
It's just human nature. And I think you can lean too hard into something, right? You could, I get it. This is working. Money, money, money. Fans, conventions. And then that could be how it starts to crumble. It's a fine line. It's not an easy decision any way around. But yeah.
Yeah. Jennifer, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think we need to rebuild the team, as I've heard in sports, right? I just feel like for a long time, coming from the original trilogy days, it felt like we had kind of formed our own team of just like carrying the Star Wars torch through, you know, legends and whatnot. And now it just feels like, yeah, like you're saying, Ken, we've been winning. We've been winning. And I kind of checked out a little bit too. We're going to rebuild the team.
I've just, yeah.
you know, and it's going to be all right. We're going to take a little break.
Yeah. Sorry. I apologize.
Yeah,
stepping on you,
yeah,
Jen. But you mentioned up top, we're talking about the explosion of nerd culture. I would say 09, 010 to 2016, 17 range palpable. And that's my run. I never stepped foot in San Diego Comic-Con to 2013. Look at it then versus now. Take strikes out of it and MCU malaise. Take all that out of it. It's exactly what you described earlier, Joseph. We all would be at these parties filling Petco Stadium, hundreds upon hundreds of us. Yeah. I was drunkenly accosting Dave Filoni in a good way, right? Me and Matt Key cornered him. Matt Key, 6'5", looking across at Rory McCann, the Hound, 6'6", and they were drunkenly having, and I'm thinking, we're talking to the Hound. Oh my God. Yeah. We had all felt as though we won. Go to Comic-Con now. Yes. We're all feeling as though we're exhausted. It's just the reality of it.
Yeah, and for me, it isn't just Star Wars. It's a wonderful thing. But around 89, 90, everything I loved was gone. Star Wars was basically gone.
Gone.
Doctor Who was canceled. Guns N' Roses was breaking up. Twin Peaks was canceled. All of it, everything I ever pined for years and years and years. Mark Hamill is Luke Skywalker again. I've seen Axel and Slash and Duff play together 3 times. Mm-hmm. Twin Peaks came back. This endless list of, it isn't just Star Wars, it's years and years and years of hunger. I've seen every superhero, with the exception of Dazzler, I can imagine on screen. In that feeling of, this is impossible. I'm being fed a meal I was told was impossible.
Right.
Is diminishing, and now I need something different. I need to hunger in a different way to feel that same sort of joy of satiation. And for me, I think it's what we talk about. It's the ideas. It's what hasn't been done before. Mm. This is why I was like, I want to dig down deep into Thrawn, not because it's like, I need all the answers about the Chiss. It's because I haven't seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen a villain who wants the Empire to succeed because he believes these things and because he's going to hand the galaxy to his people. I haven't seen that, and I want to. So that's what's leading to different hungers is being satiated in the just, it's impossible, it'll never happen. Everything's happened.
Yeah. The nerds looked across the land and wept, for there was nothing left to conquer, is how we kind of felt at one point. And there was a friend of mine once said, and I'm sure this came from some other bumper sticker or something, was like, the key to a long relationship is about every 5 to 10 years, you have to re-fall in love with the person you're with, right? That's this thing. And what you're saying, Joseph, is my excitement for Star Wars is different now, because I'm, and part of it was the transition of how Force Center, always digging into themes, but how it affected my life and why Star Wars means so much to me isn't the cool things I'm seeing, it's the important things I'm feeling. And now, as I've taken a dive into history in a way I've never done, and political connections and Star Wars being political, that's what engages me now. And so it's been fun to find a new love inside something I'm in love with permanently. And that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Absolutely. And I think, we do try to caveat and be aware. I think this is a conversation that is definitely affected by our age and the way nerd culture was treated and the things we pine for. And I do always want to reflect, I see that cycle of hunger and satiation from people who were 8 when they first met Ahsoka in the Clone Wars, and to see her and Hayden in their Clone Wars outfits together with actual Rex, they're getting that. I've been hungering for this since 2008, and I'm being satiated in a way, so I think it is generational as well as just how many episodes. So I want to shout out.
Great point.
I'll change.
Great point. And something we're always here for, the different perspectives, experiences, and journeys is another thing that helped me fall in love with Star Wars again.
Absolutely. Any final thoughts on this great question from 8984M?
The only thing for me, Jen, did you watch Winning Time?
No, I have not. No, I need to watch it. I saw the promo for it.
Another reason to hate David Zaslav for canceling that show after 2 years. If you're a Laker fan, it's one of the best television shows I've ever watched. And you want to get into the stories of the Showtime Lakers. It's based on Jeff Probst's book. You want to talk about narratives? That's a story for you. Off air, we'll talk about it. Put the kids to bed. And watch Winning Time.
Okay. Good.
So in summation, as Coach Taylor says, clear hearts, full eyes. No, other way around. clear eyes, full heart, can't lose. Yep. Anyway, that is my touchstone there. Ken, you want to take us home?
I do, I do. You can follow us on Twitter and Threads and Hive Social. I mean, we're not really on Hive Social, but we are. Force Center Pod is the place to do that, or the handle for that. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram, and we are also on YouTube, as we set up top podcasts, available in a lot of different spots. Help us in our competition to be the best podcast of all time. Just like, review, listen there. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us directly. Follow me at Cadnap. So especially if you want to tweet things to me about my Dolphins, as they have tough 3 games left in this season. All right, it's going to be tough. I'll be angry, I'm sure. You can follow me. Go to my website, kenapsack.com, for information on shows, music, the Moonagers album is out, and more. Jen, where can they find you or tweet you to watch Winning Time?
That's right. You can follow me on X, Instagram, or YouTube at Jennifer Landa, or TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138.
Joseph, I watched the Super Bowl with you, and you were having fun, and I appreciated that day. So we'll do it again.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. No, I love watching the Super Bowl, and I think I would probably make even more time for sports, but that whole time thing. I have Obi-Wan Kenobi trading cards to organize.
Right.
And I can't multitask. That takes my whole focus. Anyway, you can find me on all the social media, Blue Sky and Instagram in particular, where I'm trying to spend the most time. I'm also on Threads. We'll see who wins the social media wars and then who stars in the shows about it in about 5 years. But find me at Joseph Scrimshaw. If you want to check out any of my comedy albums, upcoming shows, my short films, all that information is on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. In particular, if you're interested in a comedy album, I have a bunch on Bandcamp. Buying those will help me make more short films, because all that money goes to my production company. That is it. We have Aid the Cues.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.